Withers strung up a man, whom they say he murdered three. Strange things have happened there. No stranger would it be if we met at midnight in the hanging tree.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Chris James. Or, as the Aussie man would say, here's me face. If you don't know who the Aussie man is, well, you're missing a very hilarious podcast. Not recommended for children. He has this something called Destination Effed. And now that you know the Organic Man Coffee Trike has the best coffee in the universe, why are you drinking that stuff from a half-human, half-fish? I guess if you're on your way to work, driving to Laredo for your morning Java might not be a viable endeavor. If you live in Laredo, make the trip and buy the best. 4501 McPherson. If you brew at home, then by all means, go to the organicmancoffeetrike.shop and make getting out of bed a happier event. Good coffee leads to good decisions. The best coffee leads to the best decisions. My definition of decaffeinated is me getting out of bed in the morning and getting the coffee pot going. Way back when I was a firefighter, we had this old guy named Mac, who hung out at the station. He's probably as old as I am right now. He'd keep an eye on our things and make coffee for our return. One day, I saw him in the kitchen, and he had two cans of coffee, one regular and one decaffeinated. He was mixing the two together. I asked him what the was he doing. He told me that nobody would drink the decaffeinated coffee, so he had to mix it with the regular coffee so he would really have neither one. I told him to never buy that decaffeinated stuff and just get the regular. Mac had no family, and when he died, he left everything he owned to the fire station. Seabrook, Texas, was the only fire station I know of that was owned by the members. The station was there before the town was incorporated. Apart, we are together. Okay, I'll bet you're wondering what that's all about. Red Side's story just came out, and I'm working my way through it. Jasper Ford is one of my all-time favorite authors. I have read most of his books, and I really loved Shades of Gray, The Road to High Saffron. I have read most of his books, and I especially loved that one. I first got Shades in 2010, a year after it had come out. I wasn't impressed by the description. Once I got started, I couldn't put it down. Eddie and Jane have a very bizarre relationship. I lost count of how many times she offers to try and kill him, and even actually tries it a few times. Ford said he was coming out with the sequel soon, as in soon after Shades had hit the bookstores. It just came out a couple of days ago. 15 years is a long time to wait for anything, especially a book. So far, I've read Shades 3 times, and I'll probably read Red Side's story a couple times over the next few years. Here's a quick rundown of the plot. Folks in the future are socially divided by the colors they can or can't see. Eddie can see a lot of red. Jane is a gray, and they're forced to do all the lower jobs for low pay and long hours. She pretty much hates the world. As Eddie grows fond of her, Jane tries to kill him a few times, they discover they kind of love each other. Add to this, all modern technology has been outlawed because of the great something that happened. As you read the book, Eddie tries to describe things he's seeing without knowing what they are. You have to guess at what the items might be. I did a horrible job describing the book. Just take my word for it. Both books are worth reading several times. I was listening to Vic Hermanson, J.J., David Griffith, and Father Birdsong on Paranormal Rundown. It might have been number 13, but I'm not listening to them in order. They were talking about flat earthers and some of their outside-of-the-box ideas. One of the gang suggested that maybe the Bermuda Triangle was actually the edge of our planet. The Bermuda Triangle was the edge of our planet, and that's why all those ships disappear. They sail off the edge. And, of course, the planes, well, they fly off the edge. He also said that flat earthers and hollow earthers might run into a bit of a problem. The show is very well worth listening to. I am not going to prove or disprove anything. I'm doing my best not to make fun of anyone or ridicule their thoughts. I'm not a guy in a white lab coat, so I don't poo-poo anyone's ideas. There are folks out there that think I have a few screws loose because of what I believe. Maybe they're right. If some of what I'm saying makes sense to you, great. If not, well, I tried. You should keep an open mind, but not so much that your brains fall out. I heard a lot of flat earth stories since as far back as I can remember. In school, I was told that everybody in the world thought the earth was flat up until that one genius, old Chris, came along. He was far smarter than all the folks on the planet. He knew that by sailing west, he could get to the far side of the globe. Yes, a globe is round. Chris wanted to visit India and bring back tons of spice, making himself and the royals of Spain enormously rich. I was taught that the Spanish authorities had to take prisoners from jail to crew the three ships. The prisoners were all convinced, as was just about everyone else, that old Chris was going to sail off the edge of the planet, and that would be the end of him, the crew, and all three ships. We had textbooks showing the prisoners kneeling on the deck, praying for salvation, with old Chris standing at the helm, aiming towards the horizon. My brain was mostly empty back then. Some say it still is. Sometimes I think they might be right. Meanwhile, on the other side of the planet, the folks who became known as the Polynesians knew the Earth was round. They were from China, and somehow the Far East was far ahead of the folks living in Europe. They did have toilet paper, so that was an advancement. The whole mystique of Columbus and his fantastic navigational skills only came out in the lead-up to the American Revolution. The colonists wanted to remove any legal claim King George had to the Americas. The British didn't discover the place, it was someone else. But who? Some digging had to be done to find anyone the colonists could hoist in the air as the true discoverer of the Americas, and somebody found this little-known footnote to history, named Chris. He went from some Italian working for the Spanish trying to reach India to the brave, bold explorer that discovered America. In the Bible, it says God created the heavens and the earth. Isaiah 40:22, it says, "It is he who sits above the circle of the earth, and its inhabitants are like grasshoppers, who stretch out the heavens like a curtain, and spreads them like a tent to dwell in." Unfortunately, the image of the flat earth is like a pancake, or better, a pizza, all lumpy with meat and cheese, a circle, only flat. As people began to populate the earth, they were probably busy doing things like farming and raising animals as food. I'm sure they would look around on occasion and wonder what kind of an object they were standing on. But then it was time to eat or take out the trash, and they stopped wondering about things they couldn't do much about. The Greek philosopher Pythagoras was the first to come up with the concept of a spherical earth back in the 6th century BC. Pythagoras' idea was based on his observations of the moon during a lunar eclipse. He noticed that the shadow cast by the earth on the moon was always round, no matter what part of the planet was facing the moon. This was one of the first pieces of evidence that people had that the earth might be a sphere. It wasn't until about 200 years later that another Greek scholar, Eratosthenes, or it's a Greek name, Eratosthenes, he came up with a way to actually measure the circumference of the earth. Greek guy. I'll call him Zorba. Well, he was a Greek after all. Eratosthenes. Eratosthenes was the chief librarian at the Library of Alexandria in Egypt. He knew that at noon on a summer solstice, the sun was directly overhead at the city of Syene, known as Aswan today. But he also knew that Alexandria, about 800 kilometers to the north, the sun was not directly overhead at the same time. By measuring the angle of the sun at Alexandria and knowing the distance between the two cities, Zorba was able to calculate that the circumference of the earth must be about 250,000 stadia. A stadia was a unit of measurement used by the Greeks. There's some debate about how long one stadia actually was, but estimates range from 100 to 130 miles. This would put the circumference of the Earth anywhere from 25,000 to 31,000 miles. This was an amazingly accurate estimate considering that Zorba came up with it more than 2,000 years ago, and he didn't even have access to modern instruments or technology. Galileo Galilei is often credited as the man who finally proved the earth was round, but like Pythagoras and Zorba before him, Galileo didn't actually discover the earth was a globe. He just proved or provided more evidence to support the idea. 1609, Galileo heard about this new invention called the telescope. He built his own version and pointed it at the night sky. Victor Manson built his own telescope as well. I don't have the time or the patience to do anything that technical. What Galileo saw amazed him. He observed craters on the moon, four moons orbiting Jupiter, and stars that were too faint to be seen by the naked eye. Galileo's observations made him realize that the Earth couldn't be the only celestial body in the universe. If there were other planets orbiting other stars, then surely the Earth was also orbiting the Sun. And if the Earth was in motion, that meant it couldn't be a perfect sphere. It had to be slightly flattened out at the poles. Galileo's observations provided strong evidence that the Earth was indeed a sphere, but it wasn't until centuries later that we finally had any kind of definitive proof of the Earth's shape. Boy, Kathy is being a nuisance today. Now I gotta find my place in my notes again. Thank you very much. Okay, if there were other planets, the shape is a result of centrifugal forces created by the Earth's rotation, which caused the equatorial bulge. Kind of like the above the belt bulge some folks have. The Earth's radius, which is the distance from its center to its surface, is approximately 3,959 miles. While the Earth appears to be round when viewed from space, it is actually closer to an oblate sphere. The Earth's diameter bulges at the equator due to the centrifugal force created by the Earth's rotation, while the diameter flattens at the poles. The oblate spheroid shape is also the basis for geodesy, the science of measuring and monitoring the size and shape of the Earth, including its gravity field and determining the location of points on the Earth's surface. Now that is way too much scientific-y verbiage. The idea that medieval people thought the Earth was flat appears to have spread in the late 19th century, about 1830, as a way of detracting from medieval Christian church, which is often blamed for restricting intellectual growth in that period. The idea everyone believed the planet was flat, and only the ones that knew the truth were keeping it a secret, was being put forth by a group of atheists trying to badmouth Christianity, especially the Catholic Church. Those nasty religious folks knew the Earth was round, but they let the masses believe otherwise as a means of controlling them. The spherical shape of the Earth was established by Greek astronomers in the 3rd century BC, and the earliest terrestrial globe appeared in that time. The earliest known example is the one constructed by Cratus of Malus in Cilicia. Now, oh boy, and it's in Turkey, in the mid-2nd century BC. No terrestrial globe from antiquity has survived. An example of a surviving celestial globe is part of the Hellenistic sculpture called the Farnius Atlas, surviving in the 2nd century AD Roman copy in the Naples Archaeological Museum in Italy. Anton Jean Latrone was an academic of strong anti-religious prejudices who had studied both geography and patristics, relating to early Christian theologians. He drew upon misrepresentations of the church fathers and their medieval successors as believing in a flat earth. In his On the Cosmological Idea of the Church Fathers, another man pushing the idea of a flat earth in the Middle Ages was an American. You've probably heard of him, Washington Irving. He loved to write historical fiction under the guise of history. His misrepresentations of the history of early New York City and the life of Washington were topped by his history of Christopher Columbus. It was he who invented the indelible picture of a young Columbus, a simple mariner, appearing before a dark crowd of benighted inquisitors and hooded theologians, all the Council of Salamanca. All of these men believed, according to Irving, that the earth was flat like a plate. There was a meeting at Salamanca in 1491, but Irving's version of it was pure moonshine, according to historians who didn't have the same agenda. Washington Irving created a fictitious account of this non-existent university council, The whole story is misleading nonsense. Too many people allow others to tell them our history. They still believe the Vikings didn't manage to find the Americas, which were never in need of discovering since the Indians were already here. The folks living in Europe in the 1400s did not think the earth was flat. This was just bad storytelling on the part of a couple of atheists. I've read a lot of books in my time. One of my favorite authors is Terry Pratchett. He had a very bizarre imagination, and so do I. His first two books met with really bad reviews by the folks who think they know what a good read is, and yet they never seem to write anything of their own. The critics didn't like Pratchett's first tries at writing. The Color of Magic came out in 1983. It was a story of Twoflower, the first ever tourist, and his wizard guide, Rincewind. Twoflower has a wardrobe that follows him around, so he always has a clean change of clothes. Rincewind is not a very good wizard. There's a group of monks living on the very edge of the planet who want to know if Atune, the great space turtle, is male or female. This will be some very good information, seeing as the coming great mating is quickly approaching. This is Atune, for those of you looking on YouTube. And yes, those are four elephants standing on her back, his back, its back. For those of you unfamiliar with the disc world, Atune is a giant space turtle swimming through space looking for others of its kind. Standing on its back are four elephants, Tubul, Jarakin, Beryllia, and Great Typhoon. There had been a fifth elephant, but he had a bit of an accident. When millions of tons of angry elephant come spinning through the sky, and there is no one there to hear it, does it make a noise? That's Terry Pratchett's quote. I don't know if the fifth elephant had a name. If it did, I don't remember. Sitting atop the backs of the four elephants is the Discworld. If you've read the book, you're probably the kind of person I would like. If you haven't read them yet, what are you waiting for? That TV show they made, well, it was okay, but the characters were nothing like the ones Pratchett had invented. Somebody in the back office thought he could improve on Pratchett's writings. Not even close. It came out 5 years after Pratchett was no longer with us. I imagine, had he seen it, he might have punched somebody in the nose. When did the flat earth actually get going? It's been around for thousands of years. There were those who thought if the earth was indeed round, we would all fall off. The concept of gravity was beyond their thinking abilities. Only by standing in the vicinity of the North Pole could anybody manage to stay on. The folks doing a lot of thinking about things, since they didn't have to work in order to eat, were able to show how the earth was a globe, but they didn't know why we stayed in place. Some people thought the sun was revolving around the planet instead of vice versa. Some people believed the earth moved around the sun, but they couldn't prove it. With improved telescopes, astronomers started looking for proof of Earth's motion around the sun, the stellar parallax. Earth's orbit is about 186 miles in diameter. If an astronomer measures the position of a nearby star and then measures it again 6 months later, the star's position against the background of more distant stars should shift a tiny bit. That year, or It wasn't until 1838 that an astronomer finally detected this shift. That year, German astronomer Friedrich Wilhelm Bessel successfully measured the parallax of the star 61 Cygni. I wonder how much coffee he had to consume before making this discovery. If that makes no sense, go back and listen to Dreams from 2 weeks ago. If you want me to look at lights in the sky, roast these beans. That was from Trailer Trash Terrors. Vicar Manson had David Griffith on, and they were talking about lots of interesting things. The boys in the white lab coats try to explain away anything mysterious. If they stumble upon something they can't explain, they call it pseudoscience and then ignore it. Next time you're talking to one of your sciencey friends, ask them, "How does gravity work?" And then you might want to go looking for some new friends, because you're going to upset that guy. I know gravity works. I'm still on the planet. I also know that I'm not magnetic. What is pulling me towards the center of the Earth? Is it some kind of a magical force that can hold on to everything in the universe? I read a lot of definitions of gravity. They had a lot of words that sounded very scientific, very long-winded. I think the folks writing scientific journals get paid by the word, whether it makes sense or not. Throw in a lot of thens, use the extra words most folks don't understand, quote a lot of other people, and repeat things several times. It makes for a much longer article. The long and short of it is, gravity works. It keeps us in place, and it affects everything, including light. No one really understands it, but that's okay by me. As long as it keeps doing its job, we'll mostly be okay. That is, unless you fall off a cliff or you're in an airplane that no longer works. Gravity can go from being a very good thing to a horrible idea really fast. We do know the bigger the globe, the more gravity it has. Jupiter has 2.5 times as strong a gravitational pull as the Earth. That's because Jupiter is very gassy. It's kind of flatulent. Uranus might be to blame for that. The thing making us stick to the planet is, it's round and we're being pulled very slightly towards the center. How gravity works on a disk is, well, it just wouldn't if there was such a thing as disk world. Being a flat surface, the gravity would have to pull a human body towards something below that is exerting equal amounts on all areas. The gravity would be just as strong at the edges as in the middle. Otherwise, as you moved around the world, you would begin to weigh more as you got closer to the North Pole. Maybe a toon is gravitational. To get to this mess, if you stepped off the edge of the disk, instead of falling, you should just hang there in space. Gravity couldn't possibly be all over all at once, or could it? If the disk world was a real place, things like the equator would be all messed up. Instead of going around the fattest part of the planet, it would have to be a curved line that extended around the point midway between the North Pole and the edge. The land below the equator, or on the other side of the line, would be about 3 times as massive as the land on the pole side. If you had a sailboat and wanted to follow the coastline of Antarctica, it would take you a long time. It's about 12,400 miles from the North Pole to the South Pole. I found several measurements that were not just a little bit different, a whole lot different. I found one site that said it was 9,800 miles. They didn't drink enough coffee. On a disk world, there would be no South Pole. It would be beyond the ice wall, they say, keeps us from falling over the edge. From the North Pole to the equator is 6,215 miles. At the equator, our planet is 24,901 miles. If you were going to run that, you would need several changes of shoes. Back when I was a runner, my shoes were only good for about 500 miles. Any further and the cushioning would become too flattened out for constant pounding to do any good, and you'd get bad knees and sore ankles, which is what I have. And I wore good running shoes. At the approximate edge of the ice wall, the distance would be, if it was a flat earth, the distance would be 77,900 miles around. The average speed of a sailboat is about 8 miles an hour. It would take well over a year to sail around Antarctica. Now, my math might be a bit off here. I never did take advanced math classes. I was given something called the new math back when I was in elementary. It screwed up my brain. Even my mother had a hard time figuring it out. The following year, they went back to doing the old math. It kind of reminds me of something they tried to pull on us a couple of years ago. In 1773, Captain Cook became the first modern explorer to breach the Antarctic Circle and reach the ice barrier. During three voyages lasting about 3 years and 8 days, Captain Cook and his crew sailed a total of 60,000 miles along the Antarctic coastline, looking for but never finding an inlet or a path through beyond the massive glacial wall. Captain Cook wrote, "The ice extended east and west far beyond the reach of our sight, while the southern half of the horizon was illuminated by rays of light which were reflected from the ice to a considerable height. It was indeed my opinion that this ice extended quite to the pole, or perhaps joins some land to which it has been fixed since creation." Some flat earthers say that Antarctica is a giant icy wall designed to keep us from falling off our disc-shaped world. All those expeditions to the South Pole, like Ernest Shackleton and Roald Amundsen and Robert Scott, were just pretend. These men walked along the very edge of the ice wall, but they never ventured inland. Some folks think there is a continent on the other side, or maybe several. There may be civilizations on the other side of the wall. I found one site saying there were 20 other continents. Other sites say the Earth is flat, but it's not a disk. It's an infinite plane that stretches on in all directions. There might be millions of continents we don't know about, and that the ice on the North and the South Pole are walls that separate our section of the Earth from the rest. Admiral Byrd is quoted as saying, "Strangely enough, there is an area left in the world today, an area as big as the United States, that's never been seen by a human being. It's an untouched reservoir of natural resources." He told people until he was ordered to stop. There was a vast area of jungle with trees and animals where humans had never ventured. Those of you who listened to my Operation High Jump show might be a bit confused by that statement. This whole other story has nothing to do with the Nazis in Antarctica. According to some of the flat Earth folks, the Earth is still sitting still. It's not revolving. It isn't spinning around at over 1,000 miles an hour, because if it was, we would all go flying off into outer space. To add to the difficulty, as you move closer to the ice wall, you'd be spinning a lot faster. Picture a bicycle wheel laid on its side. At the hub, the spokes can be seen, yet as the edge where the spokes enter the rim, it's going way too fast to make out individual nipples. Yes, that's what the spokes are held in place by. I'm not going to go into how to true a bicycle wheel by twisting the nipples. You'd need a harness to stay on your feet out there on the very edge, and this is why nobody goes there, as said by some people. The sun comes up and sets each day. Well, actually, the horizon moves up, and the sun disappears beyond it. As our night begins, the sun is coming up in Japan. The flat Earth folks say the sun moves away from our side of the planet, and it gets closer to the other side. It is too far away for us to see, even though we can still see distant stars. Flat Earthers believe that the moon and the sun are both 32 miles in diameter, and they orbit around the North Pole. Now, to mess with those who believe the Earth is a sphere. Astronauts are living up there in orbit around our planet. They send back thousands of pictures of our great big glorious sphere. They also are very photogenic. Astronauts take hundreds of photos of themselves and they plaster these all over social media. Look at how many of the astronauts look like they're sitting. It looks like they're in a chair with their necks bent and their heads at odd angles. If they were really in space with zero gravity, why do they look like they're bent all wrong? In a few images, it almost looks like there are wires holding their bodies up off the deck of the space station. Folks send me these images all the time with little red circles pointing out wires and things hanging down where everything should be floating. All that throwing jello around and slurping water is just special effects from Hollywood. As I was looking into all things flat Earth, Vic sent me some old newspaper articles, back when the news wasn't some elitist with agendas. The Tioga Herald from November 1871 had an article going into someone who had discovered the world was not round. John Hampden from London, England, had become a missionary extolling the ideas of a flat earth. When preaching failed to convince the masses, he turned to cash. He said he would give $2,500. That was a lot of money back then, to anyone who could prove the earth was either round or flat. When there were no takers, he went on to say the scientific community was afraid to take up the challenge. Finally, a Mr. Alfred Wallace came forward and he laid down his cash. Hampden set up a test to prove the earth was flat. It consisted of a smooth 6-mile stretch of land with poles set at equal distances and depths. A telescope was then to be aimed across the top of the poles. Mr. Wallace walked away with $2,500 more than he had started with. Now, with $2,500 less to his name, Hampden began trying once more to prove the earth was flat, saying that the test was skewed. Hampden began saying Wallace was all kinds of bad things, from a liar to a thief. He somehow had managed to mess up that test that would have proved the earth was flat. Wallace sued Hampden for libel and slander. Once the trial had been had, Hampden found himself out an additional $3,000. One article showed a roadside sign from Zion City that said, "No one except a low-down scoundrel, a person lower down than a skunk, would call the earth a globe in Zion City." A man named Wilbur, no, not the ethereal pest control expert, Wilbert Voliva, had joined up with Reverend John Alexander Dowie. The two men founded Zion City, 40 miles northwest of Chicago. Zion City was proclaimed as a clean city for clean people. There was to be no tobacco, alcohol, theaters, doctors, drugs, pork, or oysters allowed. How can you live without bacon? Bacon makes everything better, including bacon. Sorry, truffles. Gotta have my bacon. These rules were strictly enforced. Voliva said the sky was a vast dome, with the sun, the moon, and the stars hung from above like chandeliers. The far edges of the dome rested atop the ice wall surrounding the world. The wall was to keep foolhardy mariners from tumbling over the edge into oblivion. Voliva had other theories, such as the world was going to end in 1935 and then again in 1939. He also said the world was going to be divided up by three superpowers: Russia, the United States, and Italy. I have nothing against Italy, but when were they a world power ever since the fall of the Roman Empire? Voliva proclaimed that he was going to live to be 120 years old. He died at age 72 in Chicago, since there were no doctors allowed in Zion City. The idea the world is flat sometimes takes on religious aspects. It's not a theory, but a belief system. No proof is therefore needed. There are some people who say that dinosaur bones being dug up were placed there by the devil to confuse people on how old the earth is. By going through all the accounts in the Bible, they have added up every date mentioned and come to the conclusion the planet is 6,000 years old. Those 7 days of creation were each 24 hours long. Every time it says 40 days and 40 nights, this means just over 39 days, but under 41. How could there be a 24-hour clock if the Earth wasn't there to rotate? Once it was, the 24-hour day hadn't been invented yet. It wasn't until 1550 BC that the day was separated into hours. As for the 40 days and 40 nights, in ancient Hebrew, 40 days and nights meant a long time, not years, but maybe a month or so. The big thing to keep in mind, does it really matter how old the earth is? This is right up there with the date of Jesus' birth. Lots of people get so caught up in details, they miss the big picture. They argue about the date of his birth, and they forget to listen to what Jesus had to say. Why would finding dinosaur bones cause folks to lose their faith is beyond me. If your faith is that shaky, maybe you need to do some inner soul searching, a little reflection time. Michael Hughes was born February 9, 1956. He became known as Mad Mike Hughes when he began saying the earth was flat and he was going to prove it. Hughes built his first crewed rocket January 30th, 2014. It was crewed as in manned, not crewed as in poorly built. It was launched and it flew 1,374 feet in just over a minute in Winkelmann, Arizona. Once the craft was back on the ground, Hughes collapsed and it took him 3 days to recover. Hughes stated that the injuries suffered from the flight put him in a walker for 2 days. Unfortunately for him, there was nobody videoing him getting into or out of the rocket. This led to most people theorizing that he had simply fired the rocket into the air without anybody on board, and then put on a show of suffering from the launch and landing. Any of y'all remember the Balloon Boy? October 15th, 2009. A homemade helium-filled gas balloon, shaped like a flying saucer, was released into the atmosphere above Fort Collins, Colorado. Immediately after the launch, Richard and Mayumi Hen said that their 6-year-old son was inside the balloon. I wonder what he was breathing. You can't breathe helium. You got to have some oxygen in there. Authorities were scrambled to try and catch the runaway balloon and rescue the youngin. Let me restate that. You can breathe helium, but you got to still have oxygen to go with it. The balloon reached 7,000 feet at one point in its flight. News channels were all focused on the balloon and its cargo. Many folks were glued to their TVs or their cell phones, watching and waiting to see if the young boy was going to survive or not. National Guard helicopters and local police pursued the balloon. After flying for more than an hour and covering 50 miles, the balloon came down about 12 miles northeast of the Denver International Airport. Yes, I've talked about that place a couple of times. Falcon, that's their son, was not found inside the balloon. This was followed by people saying that they had seen an object falling from the balloon while it was still way up there in the sky. A new search was launched, this time to recover the body. Later that same day, Falcon was found hiding in the attic of his home, where he had been the entire time. How did such a small boy manage to get up into the attic of a house? Most 6-year-olds are going to have a hard time doing it, but oh, I don't know. Maybe this boy was exceptional or something. On December 23, 2009, Richard Hein was sentenced to 90 days in jail, 100 hours of community service. He was also ordered to write a formal apology to the agencies that had searched for his son. Mayumi Hein was sentenced to 20 days in jail, which was served through jail-supervised community service 2 days a week. January 2010, Hein once more began saying that the Balloon Boy was not a hoax. He said he only said that to keep Mayumi from being kicked out of the country. Nobody saw the boy in the balloon, and nobody saw Mad Max getting into or out of his rocket. In 2016, Hughes launched a failed fundraising attempt to pay for his next rocket. He raised a whopping $310. He gained more support from the Flat Earth community and then was able to raise $7,875. He intended to make multiple rocket journeys as test flights until he was able to attain enough altitude to photograph the flat disk of the Earth from outer space. Imagine it was going to look something like that. On March 21st, 2018, Mike launched his steam-powered rocket up into the sky, reaching 1,875 feet. The rocket dropped back to Earth on a parachute. Mike was able to walk away from the rocket. I had to ask myself, why does NASA spend millions of dollars on rockets when they could just look into Mad Mike's steam-powered space flights? Probably because of the last flight he made. February 22, 2020, Hughes died near Barstow, California, following the crash of his rocket. During the launch, the rocket's parachute deployed early and it detached from the craft. Some folks tell us that Mad Mike only used the Flat Earth story to get money so he could travel in outer space. But others say that no, he was very much a Flat Earther. Well, he was very much flat after the parachute incident. There are hundreds of sites on the internet telling us how they have proven that the Earth is flat. There are also hundreds of sites telling why the Earth must be round. Most of the round Earth sites start right off by mocking the Flat Earthers. When did science become a finger-pointing and name-calling society? I'm not here to convince anyone of what I believe. I have the ability to look into things and come to my own conclusions. I am 100% correct about 50% of the time. There are way too many people waiting for somebody else to tell them what to believe. Some guy in a white lab coat comes out and says, "Drink this radium water and it will cure all your ills." Or, "Put your foot in this box and see an x-ray of how your foot fits inside the shoe that you are about to purchase." What's a little radiation poisoning when you have shoes that fit just right? They'll look good inside that lead-lined coffin. A lot of time and energy is being spent on arguing one way or the other. Names are being called back and forth. Calling them conspiracy theories is having the opposite effect. People are becoming aware of how just about every conspiracy theory is turning into a spoiler alert, which draws more attention to looking into and possibly becoming convinced maybe the Earth is flat. And of course, I have to say it, River Song says, spoilers! No one ever makes themselves look better trying to make others look bad. The round earthers spend more time ridiculing flat earthers than trying to make their own point. The flat earthers have their own bizarre way of doing things. Anytime any kind of photographic evidence is presented from NASA, the flat earthers simply say, "Oh, that's fake. Those satellites orbiting the Earth, that's fake." The pictures of Neil Armstrong and, oh well, maybe those are fake, but I couldn't help but put that one in there. Anyway, this is the same tactic being used by the folks who say that Bigfoot and flying saucers don't exist. Any images being shown are said to be faked. The Patterson-Gimlin film has been examined, perused, scrutinized, and gone over using all the technology known to man. Nobody is able to say how Roger Patterson managed to make an absolutely realistic-looking Sasquatch costume. They just say, "Oh, that's some guy in a suit." So far, 13 different people have come out claiming to be the man in the monkey suit. Such an ape suit didn't exist back in 1967. But let's not let that little item get in the way. They don't believe Bigfoot is real, and so therefore the movie has to be fake. We grow up being told the Earth is round. We also grow up being told the government is honest. When one of our beliefs is suddenly shattered, how does this affect our other strongly held beliefs? NASA stands for Never a Straight Answer. They have been found out telling half-truths and outright lies. They manipulate images of things they don't want us to see. They try to blame catastrophic failures on a company that tried to warn them that the O-rings had been damaged. Pay no attention to the guy in the white lab coat using a black marker to eliminate photographic evidence. I'll bet a few of y'all are waiting for me to come out and say that the Earth is round. Or maybe flat. Like I said, I'm not going to try convincing anyone one way or the other. If you honestly believe the Earth is flat, who am I to tell you otherwise? If you believe the Earth is round, that's your privilege. Go ahead, believe it. How's that going to affect me? Not at all. What gets me all hot and angry is when someone tries to tell me I have to believe the way they do, or A, I am going to hell, or B, I am crazy, or C, I am being a bad American, and on and on. If one of my neighbors joins the Flat Earth Society, more power to them. If they buy a megaphone and start announcing their beliefs, I'm going to do something about it, probably involving a phone and the police department. Anytime I go to vote, there are hundreds of people waving signs and yelling for me to support their politician. They crowd the sidewalks leading to the polling place, and they are very annoying. If I haven't decided who I'm going to vote for before arriving at the polling place, I probably shouldn't be voting. Somebody waving a cardboard sign on a street corner is not going to convince me of anything. You are free to decide for yourself if the planet we're standing on is flat or round. If you can't decide, flip a coin. Let chance decide for you. Hope you enjoyed tonight's show. If you did, you know what to do. If you didn't enjoy it, why are you still listening? If you'd like to support the show, you can buy one of my books, The Laredo Paranormal Research Society, Fort McIntosh and the Paranormal, which is more history than actual paranormal stuff, Paranormal Laredo, and Paranormal Stories. You can find any of them at the Organic Man Coffee Trike, or if you're not in Laredo, you can find them on Amazon.com. If you like listening to the show and you want to hear all of the past archives, you can find me on YouTube or iHeartRadio. A lot of the archives are not kept on all of the platforms out there simply because I couldn't afford to pay for the storage space. Almost 400 shows now. They charge you to store that, things like that. Well, until next Saturday, this is Chris James for Strange Things. And be sure and listen to the other podcasts. You'll enjoy them.
Are you coming to the tree where they strung up a man who they say he murdered three? Strange things have happened there. No stranger would it be if we met at midnight in the hanging tree.